I don't stand before you as somebody that has done it perfectly, because I haven't been a perfect parent. I want you to know that from the outset. I sure have studied a lot. I sure have observed a lot. So I have some ideas and some insights that I want to share with you today. Ricky told me about the theme being stepping stones to an effective family. And I thought, well, how appropriate it would be for us to kind of use as a skeleton some of the research of Brother Nick Stanay at the University of Alabama. He was my major professor over there. In 1986, I read a Reader's Digest article entitled Secrets of Strong Families. Well, I was kind of attracted to that because what I had read before about families had been mostly problems that people have in their families. And this particular article talked about some things that he had been finding in his research among families that were family strengths. Find out later, when I learned about his research, he has spent most of his career studying what's right with families instead of what's wrong with families. Now, there is a unique approach to things. I like that. And that's one of the reasons we call it the Cloverdale Center for Family Strengths. We're taking a look at what's right with families, not what's wrong with families. And so we're trying to build a model of strength, an example for all of us to follow. There are families everywhere that are successful. But what we hear mostly about are those that are torn down the middle through divorce or unfaithfulness, kids leaving home, running away. Bad things are happening to families. There are challenges out there. There are no perfect families because every family is made up of people. And people have problems. People have challenges. People have shortcomings. We all make mistakes. I don't know about you, but when I make that statement, I think of Romans 3:23. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There are no perfect parents. I've made dumb mistakes as a parent. I wish I could go back and do some things over. God knows that we're people, and our families are not perfect. But anyway, I studied that article, I read that article, and found out that at the end it said Dr. Stanay was at the University of Alabama. So to make a long story short, I called him and met him. And a couple of years later, I was allowed to go over and take a course under Dr. Stanay, a night course. And I sat down with our president, Billy Hillier, there at Faulkner, and I said, Brother Hillier, why don't we do something special here at Faulkner to study families and to talk about it, to teach others how to have a strong family. He liked the idea. So he allowed me to go to school. I commuted from Montgomery for 5 years to Tuscaloosa to get that degree. And I studied under Nick Stanay. Nick and his wife Nancy, both members of the church, both have taught at Alabama now for about 20 years. And he continues to be a mentor of mine. So I thought, well, stepping stones. Stanay's Six Secrets of Strong Families would be perfect stepping stones, just to kind of use as a skeleton for our thoughts today. So that's kind of the approach I'm taking with this. When Nick first got the idea, he was a younger man, the idea for family strengths research. And he decided that let's take a look and ask families across the country, what are you doing right? What do you feel like are your strengths? He was at the University of Nebraska at the time. This was in the early 70s. He and his colleague John Dufresne did the initial research study. And they advertised in newspapers across the country. And they asked county extension agents, could you give us names of what you feel are successful, strong families in your community? And by word of mouth, they found these different families. And they gave them a survey. And then they studied these surveys. And in the initial study, they looked at 3,000 of these families. And they attached the label, strong families. It doesn't mean they're perfect families. It just means that they're vibrant. They're able to face the challenges that all of us face and make it through successfully. They endured. And that's what I like to call marriages that make it 40, 50, 60 years. They're enduring marriages. And by the way, I do bring you greetings from Faulkner University and the Cloverdale Center for Family Strengths and the Prattville Church of Christ in Prattville, Alabama. At the Cloverdale Center for Family Strengths, we put out a magazine 2 times a year called Our Families. And I have a few sample copies out there on the table in the foyer. I'm just curious, how many of you receive our families in the mail? Okay, there are a few of you. Okay. If you'd like to receive, it's a free publication. There's a sign-up sheet out there in the foyer. If you just put your name and address, we'll mail it to you. It comes out twice a year. No salesman will call. And we'd love to provide that for you. It's a magazine that contains different articles that we feel like will enrich family relationships. So, but one feature of that, in the back of the magazine, we're looking for couples that have been married for 50 years or longer. And when we first started this, I thought, man, it may be kind of hard to keep this going, you know, finding somebody who's been married 50 years, that's a long time. But you know what? They just keep flooding in from everywhere. And all I do is just mention it casually to a group like you, and I get names here. People who have been married 50 years or more everywhere. They're everywhere among us. And I see them like gold mines among us. I don't know how you see older people, people who've been married a long time. But they're gold mines that we need to be taking advantage of, learning from, being inspired by. Do we have anybody here that's been married 50 years? How long, Brother Sergeant? 51. Congratulations. I don't know whether you brethren clap. I want to ask you to clap since we're in an auditorium, but could you say amen? Amen. That is a great example for us, right here among us. The sergeants are showing us that it can be done. And there's so many young couples that get discouraged, and they bail out on one another, and they leave kids. And they split up a family that has kids. And those kids grow up bearing that burden. But anyway, if you will give us their names, we'll send them a letter, a questionnaire, and ask them just to tell their story. That's all this is. They tell their story. And we run a couple of pictures, and we put them in the magazine and make them famous. So if you know somebody that's been married 50 years or more, I'd love to get you sergeant, brother, sergeant in there, just to tell your story. Why? Not to brag about what we've done, but for the benefit of the rest of us, the ones that are following behind, we younger ones. I say that kind of giggling, brother sergeant. To show an example of success in marriage. I'm not talking about a perfect marriage. I'm not talking about perfection here. And when we talk about family strengths, we're not talking about perfect families. But tell us your story. Tell us what your challenges are. Tell us how you work through them. And we share that in the magazine. So magazines and samples are on the table out there if you'd be interested. We produce materials like that. We produce some other printed materials. I have one that I brought with me today. I'll be giving out a little later. We also do workshops, such as this one. Primarily, I do marriage and family workshops. It's a rare occasion I get an opportunity to do a parenting workshop. But we produce the written materials as well. We also do premarital counseling. I do a lot of premarital counseling among the students there at Faulkner with the idea of preparing them for the challenges that they're about to face and getting to know each other a little bit better. Well, anyway, Stine did that study, and in that 3,000 families back in the 70s, they found six characteristics that these families, what they call strong families, shared in common. And he calls that the secrets of strong families. In fact, in 85, they wrote a book. Stine and Dufresne wrote a book called Secrets of Strong Families. And I thought we would use those characteristics, or some of them today, for our purposes. Well, they found that commitment to the family, there was not all these characteristics were in every family, but these were the predominant ones. Commitment to the family, begin with the commitment to the marriage relationship itself. Appreciating one another, appreciation for one another, not only appreciating one another, but expressing that appreciation to one another. And we'll talk more about that momentarily. Good communication skills. In these families, they said, we're able to talk with one another freely and openly and work through any difficulties that we faced. Fourth, time spent together. And Stine goes as far as to say, most of these people talked about quality time. Quantities of quality time. Sometimes you hear the debate about quality versus quantity. Well, I don't have as much time to spend with my family, but the time that I do spend with them is quality time, good quality time. But Stine's research indicates that these strong families spend a lot of quality time together, a lot of quality time. We'll talk more about that as well. Then fifthly, the ability to deal with crisis. The ability to deal with crisis. Every family faces challenges and problems. These families know how to either work through it together or they know where to go to get help. And that's one of the things I really try to impress on young couples. Stay plugged into the church, a local church, under an eldership. Be involved, not just to come to worship, although that's so important in Bible study, but be involved in the work of the church. What a network, what a support network the church is. I don't know how people in the world make it out there. When all the bad things in life come, death and sickness and other needs. And we rally around one another in the church, don't we? We're a family. And I tell these young couples, don't quit going to church. And when you get married, don't come in late, sit on the back pew and then leave early. Never really get to know anybody. Come to Sunday school. Be an active part of the Sunday school class that's your age. Maybe young couples or whatever. Get involved in the activities of the church. Come regularly. Don't just come Sunday morning. Never show up Sunday night or Wednesday night. Feel a connection with the Lord's church. And then when the kiddos come along, you don't have to say, well, you know, we got young children. I guess we better start going back to Sunday school. Or maybe we ought to get serious about being part of a church. Make it part of who you are. I heard a talk not long ago on the family, a great presentation. It was entitled, Does God Live at Your House? That's a pretty piercing question, isn't it? Does God live at your house? Does God live in my house? And then sixth is spiritual wellness. Now, isn't that interesting? Now, this was not a religious survey by any stretch. It was at the University of Nebraska. But these couples kept telling them, we believe in a higher power. We believe in God. And we believe in a creator. Now, I'm not about to suggest, and I've asked Nick about this, not every single person was a Christian. There were several other different religions, some represented in that study, in that sample. And I'm not suggesting that everyone would believe God necessarily the way we do, but they acknowledged God the Creator. And for the most part, the majority were church-going folks. And were involved in a local church. So there's a spiritual element in this secular study. Now that was 3,000 families. That was the original study. Nick has continued to study strong families over the years. And he has now involved 14,000 families that he calls strong families. Not 3,000, but 14,000. In 21 countries. Not just in our country. I was privileged to go with Nick to Russia and Ukraine a couple of times. And we established and set up some research teams over there. And that was a great experience. And guess what? Cross-culturally, all the countries that he studied so far, the research still reflects those six characteristics or those six strengths. Now, that's not to say there aren't others, because there are others. And there are other researchers that are finding some others. But for his research, those six characteristics continue to be reflected as he surveys and questions those families about what's strong about your family. Now, That field of studying strong families is called family strengths research. And the focal point of family strengths research is looking for what's good, not for what's bad or what's wrong. And we certainly need to know what the problems are, don't we? And most of us have challenges, and most of us have some problems that we face. But the focus is on looking what's good, what's right. And more in the field of counseling, this family strengths research has spilled over into the field of counseling. More and more counselors now are using that framework as their approach to counseling. Instead of bringing couples in and letting them beat up on each other for two or three sessions, you bring them in and you ask them, what's good about your relationship? What's good about your marriage? You try to transfer their negative thinking to a positive approach to it. Every one of us in this auditorium has some good in us. I remember I was a youth minister years ago. This is back in the 1900s. And at the church where I was, there was an annual practice for, they called it a baccalaureate service. And it was the Sunday night before graduation for most of the kids. And my challenge was, the youth minister was to stand up before the congregation, have the seniors on the front row and tell something good about each senior, and then the elders would come up and present them with a Bible. It was really a neat little ceremony. This was after our worship service. And I remember one year I had one of those guys. He'd been in my youth group for 4 years. And I'm telling you, I could not think of one good thing to say about that kid. Not one. I really wrestled with that. It came, you know, that Sunday. I mean, I had 12, 13 seniors in that group, and here's this one. What am I going to do? I'm going to be embarrassed. I'm going to say something good about everybody but him. Finally. I thought, well, you know, he is good at such and such. No, I'll use that. Even in the most undesirable, there's something good. There's good in everybody. There's good in every spouse. There's good in every child. I don't care how ornery they are. I don't care how rebellious they are. I don't care how stubborn their will is. There's good in every child. There's good in every person. I mean, let's be reminded of that, brethren. Jesus went to the cross and died. Why? Because there's good in everybody. He saw good in everybody. Why is there good in everybody? Because of the love of God. And so, the emphasis is to look for what is good in a marriage relationship and in a family. So I thought, why don't we use two or three of his secrets as stepping stones for our purposes today. Did any of you order the body you have? Let me say that again. I know it's hard to believe. Did he really say that? Did any of you order the body that you have? Did any of you request to be brought into this world during this period of history? Did any of you order the family that you have? No. And I don't spend too much time on this, but just think about it. And this is my opinion. I'm not using the Bible for this. This is my opinion. I believe that God had a purpose in mind for every one of us in this auditorium. And I believe He had a purpose for seeing to it that our family, the family we were brought up in, is the one we were brought up in. I think about the family that I grew up in. I dearly loved my mom and dad, but it was not a Christian home. I could tell you all kind of bad things about that family, but there are a lot of good things about that family as well. And I've often wondered, you know, as I've grown older and have colleagues that teach Bible at the school there and other wonderful, wonderful faculty at Faulkner, what a privilege I have every day to go to work and work among Christians like that. But I wonder, why did I grow up with the background that I have? I don't know, but I believe God had a purpose in mind. And what I've tried to do is to use what I do have, not understanding everything that happened way back then. I had no control over any of that. But I do have control over today. I do have control over the decisions I make. I do have control over the plans that I make. I do have control over my attitude, my behavior, my priorities. In fact, in marriage, I can't control my wife. I tried that, guys, early on. Have y'all ever tried that? It don't work. Very sadly, I had a call from a young couple this week, this past week. Young couple. They're just in their early 30s. They have three precious children, one teenager, and then two younger kids. And the wife left, took the kids. Husband came home and they were gone, and he didn't know what's going on. He was almost clueless. Well, talking to her, he's been mean. He's been harsh. He's been a controller. Members of the church now. And I tell you, brethren, I'm seeing more and more of this. I was discussing this with Ricky last night a little bit. More and more young men who give great impressions to their brides and to the premarital counselor, and they get married, and then he becomes mean. Or he shows himself to be mean and harsh and critical. And I don't know what all's going on. And Ricky had some great insights. I tell you, you got a great one in Ricky Butts. I take advantage of being around him. In fact, I asked him, why'd you invite me to come do this seminar? You do it. I love listening to him. Great insights. And he suggested, well, look at our culture. Look at the permission that's being given. Look how women have been degraded and brought down. So a lot of things at work there. But man, we need to be in control of our desires, and we need to realize that we're married to an individual, a human being, a person. We need to treat them with respect. So I believe God has a purpose in mind for every one of us. And I think the real challenge for you and me is to determine what is God's purpose. What is God's purpose in this marriage? And I believe He had a purpose in mind. I may be way off here. I don't know. And He given me the kids that I was given. I'm telling you, I have a boy and a girl. And there have been some real challenging times with the boy and the girl. And they're not here to defend themselves, and this is being recorded, and I'm not going into any details on this. It wouldn't be fair to them. Because I think back over my growing up, and I was a challenge to my parents as well. There have been times I would ask myself, why did God give me children like these? Why me, Lord? You ever felt that way? Why me, Lord? And I believe that there's something about those children that God wanted me and Sherry to interact with, and those personalities, maybe as a way for us to grow personally. But maybe in some ways that we could reach that kind of child. Or God saw something that was needed. I'm convinced that God wants those children to grow up and to love Him and respect Him. But purpose is what I'm talking about here. What's the purpose of a family? What's the purpose of a family? And I'll wait for a reply here. I know we're in an auditorium. What is the purpose of a family? Companionship, yeah, that's very biblical, yeah. Adam was without a companion, and God took a rib and brought him a woman. And He said, finally, here's one for me, a companion. So companionship, certainly. Anybody have another idea? What happens as a result of companionship? Usually there's some little kiddos that come along, aren't there? I want to suggest to you, and just this is a thought, one of the primary purposes for a family is development. Think about it, development. First of all, Genesis talks about be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. So in our families, we are to replenish the earth. We're to procreate. So I think procreation is part of that development. But also training. Isn't it a training ground? Isn't it a laboratory, as it were? I believe God's intent is that we take these young precious souls and our mates and we train them in the ways of the Lord. And we lead them. We put them on the right road that leads to heaven. What do you think? Any ideas on that? Okay. I don't do somersaults or anything like that now, so let's open our Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. And let's just remind ourselves of some things. I think as we start on at the outset here. As we talk about the family being, its purpose being development of the members of the family. Deuteronomy 6. Verse 6, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently to thy children, and shall talk of them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them upon the posts of the house and on your gates. So the Israelites were instructed to teach diligently their children. We have a responsibility in the home to see that our children are taught. Turn with me over to Psalm chapter 78. Psalm 78. Here the psalmist says, verse 1, give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. What he begins to describe here is this cycle that God expects. Someone has taught us about God. We're to teach the coming generation about God. I read a bumper sticker the other day. It said, if you can read this, thank a teacher. It's pretty good, isn't it? Somebody taught us, didn't they, to read. It may have been several somebodies that influenced us to help us to maybe refine the words that we understand and where we read with expression. And over the years, there were several of them that taught us. But you and I are debtors to those people. We owe somebody for our education. Every one of us is a debtor to God. Look what God has done for us. His only son was offered as a sacrifice at Calvary for the remission of our sins. You and I should have been hanging on that cross. But he stepped in and took our place. What a love God has for you and me. We are debtors. And I don't know about you, the way I feel is, God, this frail human being that I am, with all of my inadequacies and imperfections and mistakes and willful sins, all of that, take me and use me, Lord. Use me, such as I am. Use me. And I believe that every one of us in this auditorium should have that attitude. God, look at the abilities you've given me and the personality you've given me. I didn't ask for it, but here it is. Use what you have, where you are. Do the best you can with God's help to please Him. Be a living sacrifice. And so he says, somebody taught us. Verse 4, we will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praise of the Lord, His strength, His wonderful works that He has done. Somebody taught us. We're going to teach this younger generation and our families, our children. We're going to teach them about God, about His goodness, about His kindness, about His wonderful works. It reminds me of my days in high school in Augusta, Georgia. I went to Richmond Academy, oldest high school in the country, established in 1783. The only other claim to fame, and I don't see Ricky in here right now, but somebody tell him I said this, is that Pat Dye attended school there. And was a football, all-state football player at Richmond Academy. And he was a few years before I got there, but they were still talking about the Dye brothers when I got there. And my senior year of high school, I played basketball and baseball, and the track coach asked me to run track that senior year. I was quick. I could run, 110 yards pretty fast. And so he put me on a 440 relay team. I really enjoyed that. That was neat. 440 relay team. It was four, on those days, the track for 440 yards. And that's really, a relay team is a science. And the first guy starts, he has a baton. And he runs 110 yards and he hands off to the next guy. Well, you only have about 10 yards a period, it's called the exchange zone, where you have to make the exchange with that baton. If you make it outside that, you're disqualified. If you drop the baton, you're disqualified. And so here you are, the second guy standing here. He's watching that guy's flying. Well, he's standing still. He has to time his begin, reach out back, and hold his palm up for that baton. And the guy puts the baton in his hand, and when he gets it, he takes off as fast as he can. Many teams have been disqualified because they dropped the baton. Race is over if you drop the baton. That 440 relay team that I was on won the region meet. I never even run track before. A couple guys in there, we didn't know what we were doing, basically. We worked hard, and we won the region meet. Went to state and got killed. We weren't even close. But there's the concept. We have a baton, every one of us, a baton of faith. One of the New Testament writers calls it a treasure in earthen vessels. What is that treasure? It's the knowledge that we have of God and His goodness and His gospel. Look what we know, brethren. Look what we've been taught. Look what we've taught ourselves by study. It's a treasure. And God's expecting us to take that treasure, that baton of faith that we have, and pass it on to the next generation. Not drop that baton. Make sure that they have it. What a responsibility. And then over in 2 Timothy in the New Testament, 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5. 2 Timothy 1, 5. Now, feel free to make comments. I know we're in an auditorium. I can, and they are taping this, but I can come up and give you my microphone if need be. 2 Timothy 1:5. And Paul is talking about his relationship to Timothy. He says, "When I call to remembrance the unfeigned faith that's in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I persuade that's in you also." What is he describing there? He is describing this process of handing off that baton of faith. And it's gone on for generations. And so what I'm suggesting is you and I are debtors to somebody, somebodies that have taught us the truth of the gospel, have taught us about the New Testament church. Aren't we blessed? Look what we know. And God wants us to share that for our purposes, in our families. I mean, He wants us to share it with the whole world, but for our purposes this weekend, He wants us to share that in our families. And in Titus 2, same principles being taught there. Talks about the older men in verse 2, talks about the older women in verse 3, train the younger. And there's certain characteristics there, train the younger women and the men. Verses 5 and 6, train them, teach them. So the primary responsibility rests on the shoulders of we parents. It's a good thing, I think, to have youth ministries and Sunday school classes and summer camps and Lads to Leaders and exposure and all of that. All that's good. But that's to help me and my wife with our children. We are the primary teachers. We have the primary responsibilities. It's not a matter of just turning my kids over to the youth minister in eighth grade and come back 4 years later and see how they turned out. Those are my kids. Those are my children. And I'm not willing to lose my children to the devil. Are you? I'm not going to lose my children to the devil. And so I take advantage of these opportunities for these people to have a good influence on me. I want my children to be hanging around Christian people because evil companionships corrupt good morals. And a corollary, I think, is true. Good companionships increase good morals. I want my kids hanging around good people. Good Christian people. That's why I want my kids here in Sunday school. That's why I want them here in church regularly. That's why I want them here on Wednesday night. That's why I want them to see me carrying my Bible. Because I'm teaching them. I'm teaching them that the Bible is important to me. I want them to see where I've written notes in my Bible. Why do you do that, Daddy? Because I love this word. love it. I tell you, I don't know where I'd be without this particular Bible, too, with all my notes in it. I've misplaced my Bible a few times, and I felt lost. Got a lot of notes in this Bible. And in my mind, when I think of a scripture, I can see the pages on it. I know where to go. And that doesn't mean I know the whole Bible. There are passages that I can see, and when I start looking for them, I know where to be looking for them. But our kids are watching us. You cannot give your kids what you do not possess. Our kids are to be trained, not governed. Please let this sink in. Now, I'm not suggesting that we don't need to have rules and discipline. We do. That's part of life. But the focus. They're to be trained, not governed. Growth of character, not merely good behavior, is the object of home life. Did you hear that? Growth of character, not merely good behavior, is the aim, the object of home life. Scared me to death when David came to me at 16 and said, "Daddy, can I have the car keys, please?" "Where are you going, son?" "Oh, me and the guys, we're just going to hang out. Can I use the car?" And I guess that, about that time is when it really hit me. I mean, I'd thought about it before, but it really hit me. Have I prepared him for this? Is he ready for this? Is he ready for that world out there? And I don't know that any of us ever feel totally adequate with the job that we've done. I know I could have done a better job in some areas. I wish I could go back and do over. But there will come a time where your children are going to leave. Have we prepared them for what's out there? Growth of character. It has to be in here. It has to be in here. Okay, so I thought we'd take a look and use the stepping stones, communication, appreciation, and time together as some that we could kind of zero in on for this particular session. And I've asked some kind volunteers to help us ahead of time. They've worked hard. They came early this morning so that we could all benefit from this next segment. And I've asked them to build a tower of strength, talking about their families. And so I'm going to ask if my volunteers would come, and if you're not ashamed of what you've done, if you'll stand beside your tower. If you'd come on down. Oh, look, they're all claiming it. That's great. And what I asked them to do was, on the balloons, there are six balloons, I said, put on two of the balloons, two of the strengths in your family. On two of the balloons, put two of the strengths of your kids. And on two of the balloons, put a strength that you see in your spouse or your mate. And so they're going to explain to us what they've done here.
As far as the strengths, I guess, my wife suggested we focus and put the strengths of the family on the bottom. She's the creative one and thoughtful one. I think the first one is that you've hit on is we have the same goal of we understand it's our job to teach our kids about God. It's secondary that they get it at a good education here at the congregation as well. Also, my wife thinks I am a good spiritual leader. I appreciate that. And one that we were contemplating as to whether or not it would actually show up as a strength, we felt it was, is we spend a lot of time together, family time, whether in hobbies. It may be taking our kids to, you know, gymnastics, basketball, soccer, or we spend time out on the boat taking vacation, or sword fighting and playing guns in the house. So spend a lot of time together. I guess one of the strengths I find in Holly is she is a multitasker. I operate with tunnel vision, and she's come to understand that. If she wants my attention, She has to turn the TV off, take the phone away, take the computer away, and we might focus. She is able to, I joke with her, when she gets sick, it's a bad thing. When Mama gets sick, the world falls apart. She can multitask, she can handle snotty noses, whining kids, homework, cooking, cleaning, doing her job at work, at school. I operate one thing at a time. She's good at that. I guess as far as kids, we were trying to figure out how to describe our son. Wesley is, we asked Ricky for this, and he said, enthusiastically unselfish. I was thinking of he is full bore, wide open. He has never gone into anything he does half-hearted. Doesn't matter what he's playing, what he's doing, he's excited about it. The other side of it is, my wife talked about it. She said, even if he doesn't win at something, he's excited that the other kid won. Our little girl, Mackenzie, is described as tender-hearted and caring. She is, I guess a good example would be whenever someone gets sick at the house, she is overly sympathetic to the point where my son was in the recliner, in my recliner, laid out with the covers and his drink and, you know, laying there coughing and feeling horrible. She crawls in the other recliner with a blanket, her drink, and starts her little hacking. Mommy, I feel sick too. She is overly sympathetic. No one in that house will get sick without getting a hug from her. Did I hit on everything?
He's a spiritual leader. I put that he's our spiritual leader. That is his strength, or one of his strengths, I should say.
We learned one thing through this exercise. I don't know where Ricky is, but this, there he is. This this podium, or this stage is leaning, because when we built this, it was straight. So the stage has a slight slant to it. Same thing, Hillary, ironically, had the same idea, put the family strengths at the bottom, though we could only think of one family strength to begin with, so our other family strength ended up on the top because we were so fixated on it being exactly right. That's Hillary's quality, but it's not on this list. First and foremost was trust as a family strength. We one of the things that Hillary and I did when we were dating and got to that point in our dating relationship where we knew that it was imminent that we were going to get married, we were very fixated on when we got married that it was for life. I mean, we both of our parents are divorced, and we said that's not going to happen to us. So one of the big components of that was the trust that we went into our marriage with. And I think that's one of our biggest strengths, because in my mind, everything else builds off of that. Because I screw up on a daily basis. I know that. You guys all know that. Hillary definitely knows that. But she trusts that at the end of the day, we're our committed family. So that's one of our family strengths. The one that ended up on the top that's pulling this thing to the side is thoughtfulness. And though you guys probably don't see it, we try to be very thoughtful of it with each other. Try our best to consider the whole family when a lot of decisions are being made, so I'm not going to ramble about that one. Hillary's was hardworking, and again, any of you that know Hillary, you know that she is just going all the time, and she wears me out. There's so many nights that I get home after practice or after whatever, and she's still working, and I sit on the couch, and I'm like, come sit down, please, just sit down. And she's still going and going and going, and she makes me tired watching her work so much. But that's a great strength of hers, because obviously with two girls and me to take care of, you have to work hard, and so that's a great trait of hers. Megan and Caitlin, for those of you who don't know, we have two daughters. they're real similar in a lot of ways, and we put tenderhearted and caring, ironically, for them, and those are pretty well interchangeable. We sit there and thinking how we say the two things about them, but Megan is very, I mean, tenderhearted to the extreme, like I think a lot of young ladies are, in that, I mean, it's nothing for her to come in and just start crying one day, and we're like, what are you upset about? Well, something happened with a friend of hers a week ago, and it just still upsets her, and she's that concerned about this friendship that she has that, you know, a week later, she's still crying. Now, as a guy, that's foreign to me because, you know, we just don't deal with that, but obviously, Megan, that's how Megan is. Caitlin, again, from the caring aspect, gets this from Hillary. Hillary's a nurse and is all about caring. I mean, she's committed her life to caring for very sick people. But those of you who know Dorothy Waters, we went and visited her, you know, literally weeks before she had died. And she was in real bad shape. And Caitlin didn't miss a beat. She walked in, and even though Miss Waters was in this really sad state, Caitlin walked in and just started playing with her hair and started coloring her picture, and that was just amazing to me because, honestly, I didn't even want to walk in the room. I mean, that's just, I don't deal well with sick people or whatever. Where Caitlin, I'm amazed that our kids have turned out so well given me. But I attribute it all to Hillary. And then, was that the last one? Oh, well, I didn't have any good traits, so we just put an extra one in there for the family. Forgiving, that's what it was.
We put forgiving for him.
I'm going to clip it on you.
I can't talk very well. I've lost my voice. Forgiveness, because we were talking, and he does. He's very forgiving. Unlike me, it takes me a while to forgive. So that's one of his good qualities.
Like Scott and Hillary, we also looked at marriage and the commitment of marriage as long-term, as lifelong. We've never discussed divorce. We've discussed murder a couple of times, but but never divorce. When I began to think about, you know, the number of qualities that Nellie had, it was so tough to narrow it down because she has so many great qualities. But I picked patience, and if any of you know me, you know there's times when patience is an essential virtue. And but she's certainly been patient and loving and kind over the years, and has really been, in many ways, the glue that holds our family together for those wonderful qualities. I look at a number of qualities in Nellie, and in many ways, those are the qualities that I aspire to. I know a lot of you men can probably agree with me. As you look at your wives and say, there's so many things about her, you know, that I would love to emulate, and it's been a, excuse me one second, thank you, and it's been just a great marriage. As far as family strengths, we have unity and love, and I think those qualities best describe what we have together as a family. I like the closeness that we have as a family, the way that we're able to talk, and in spite of problems that may come up from time to time, as problems do in life, we're still a family, you know, despite all of that, and that has always been paramount in our lives. That it's not the end of the world. You know, when we have these problems, it's not a matter of just excommunicating someone and the relationship ending. We're still a family, and we're gonna get through it, and we're gonna work it out. And having that unity and love, and knowing that, as the scriptures say, that love covers a multitude of faults or sins. with regard to our children, we have four wonderful children, two boys and two girls, and I think one of our young men are here tonight with his beautiful bride, and we have three beautiful grandsons, which I could go on and on and on about, but the time would not permit. But we picked for our boys kindness and gentleness. And David is a very kind individual, very thoughtful and very hardworking father. He has, and he's always been kind of the ringleader, as the eldest children will be, and others have looked to many of his strong qualities, and one of them I think is kindness. He's very kind. And Stephen, of course, Stephen is very sensitive, and but he's gentle, very very thoughtful, and also a very hard worker. Both of them, in addition to my daughter, work for Pilot Catastrophes, and it's just been a busy time with a lot of what's going on around the country. My daughters, Nikki and Angie, we put down for Nikki, insightful. And Nikki's always had that quality of being wise beyond her years. Seems to go right through all of the red tape a lot of times and see the core issue at hand and what's really important. And I've always appreciated that and admired that about her. And Angie is also very sensitive, like her brother Stephen, and very thoughtful person, very emotional, and sometimes overly so, but a very sensitive and loving and thoughtful individual. And I also want to say that I see in all of our children a number of those qualities. There's a lot of overlap, a lot more dominant traits in some than others, but I'm thankful to say that I see all of those things in them, and I'm appreciative of that, and really look at the foundation of God and His Word in order to bring that about, in spite of the culture, in spite of a lot of the negative things that we see out there. And just to echo something Donnie said earlier, I just don't know how families that don't have a strong biblical foundation for their life make it today. The odds are truly against those families.
My turn. Okay. For Mike, same as what he did earlier, I had so many words for him that I wanted to say, but it was hard to put it all in one word. So the one I came up with was goodness. I see a lot of goodness in him, and just the way he relates to me, the way he relates to his children, the way he relates to just family, and even, people within the church. He's always there if somebody needs him. He always has the right words. And he goes beyond what is asked of him. I think that is a great quality with him. And if he's so dependable. I know I was thinking about putting dependable in there, but he just didn't sound all the way there. It just sounded kind of like, okay, that's dependable. But he is, they know that anybody can go to him, and they know that the job is going to be done, that he will take care of it. And the children grew up with that sense that something was wrong, just go to dad. He will know exactly what to do, and he will guide you through it, and he's strong, and he will take care of business. Let me go a little bit for the family, too, if you don't mind. One of the things was with the family is that we had the unity and the love, because the children know that we love them very much, that no matter what, we're going to love them. And we're always
always been trying to be together, like if it was a haven within our home. So when they went and did something or something happened to them, we all hurt for them. And now, of course, their spouses, you know, and their children, we are together in this. And they know that they come to us. One of my children one time told me, he said, you know, if you guys were not together, I don't know if we can trust in marriage. So I you know, certainly agree with that 100% when you said that we are an example, you know, for them, you know, and we need to be strong and fight those storms that come, you know, in a marriage sometimes, because there's not a perfect marriage, you know, but we certainly, you know, strive to be the best we can with God's help on that, and they know that they are looking, you know, as an example, and hopefully we're trying to give the best example that we can, being not perfect. Thanks.
When we met with Mr. Donnie this morning, and he gave us our little project to do, we decided to do it kind of how our marriage was built up. If you look at our little tower here, we put the bottom three as the foundation, our strengths, what is our favorite strength, and then what we thought our best strength as a family was. And when me and Summer first got married, that's pretty much how we developed our family. We sat down and we said, hey, we're going to become our family first before we have any kids. We want to be who we want to be before we have kids. Because it aggravates me a lot when you hear people, they have kids and they say, oh, we have our own family now. No, you had your family before you had kids. You're just adding to your family. So that's kind of what we did. We put our foundation, what we thought was our strong strengths, and then we put our kids on top because they're standing on our shoulders. And then the very top is what we're trying to get our family to be as a whole. So Summer's strength is, and if you know Summer, you know this already, she's very passionate about everything she does, whether she is being a mom, being a wife, teaching class, everything. I mean, she's the most passionate person I know. And if you think about the great people that do great things, they're passionate about what they're doing. You don't see very many good people being great, you know. You can take somebody passionate about something, and they're not really good at it, and they'll be better than the people that's just good at it. And that's how she is. She's great at everything. Our strongest strength is we have great communication. And I'm not saying it's always been great communication, because when we first got together 11 years ago, I was not the best communicator. But I figured out early on that that's pretty important after being in the doghouse several times. So we communicate about everything. We sat down before we got married and said, hey, we don't ever want to go to bed being mad at each other or there being a problem that isn't fixed. And we've done that. I mean, I'm not saying that there hasn't been long nights, but the problem was somewhat solved when we went to bed. So I think we're great communication. And we have two children. I'm going to talk about my son, and she's going to talk about our daughter. Tucker, he is 3 years old, and he is probably the most considerate person that I've ever known, really considering that he's 3 years old. I mean, he wants everybody to be happy, and he hates people to be sad. Like, if he sees you sad, if Summer's sad, he'll go up to her and say, Mommy, you sad? Don't be sad, Mommy. Don't be sad, Mommy. And the other day, after church, we stopped by McDonald's, and I got one milkshake. And Andy's a year and a half years old, so they're 3 year and a half. And they're in the back seat. Tucker's got his milkshake, and I was like, man, I should have got two. This is going to be bad. And Tucker was drinking. Andy started whining, and he handed her the milkshake. And she drank it, and then he's like, okay, Sissy, it's my turn. And then she'd give it back, and then she'd start whining again, and he'd give it back to her. And I'm like, man, he's 3 years old, for Pete's sakes. I don't do that, and I'm 29. He's one of a kind. He's fine. And Summer's going to talk to you about the other three.
Um, when he gave us the balloons and he only gave us one balloon to do for each other, I went into panic mode because I've been picked on because of the way that I view my husband. I think that he is very, very near perfect. And I know we keep saying there's no such thing as perfect, but I think that he is as close as you can get to it in the form of a husband and a father. And I feel like Miss Nelly, I was like, oh my goodness, I don't think that I can come up with just one word to express what I want to express about his strengths. But I finally settled on devoted, and I chose that because I feel like in everything that he does, he gives it 110%. And when you're talking about a husband, wanting that husband to love you and be affectionate towards you and meet all of your needs, he is totally devoted to that. And that is the best gift that he could give me. He always wants me to be happy, and he always wants to be being the best husband that he can be. And in terms of his Christianity and his goal to be the spiritual leader in the home, he's totally devoted to that. He puts in so much energy, and he goes to work, and he's totally devoted to being a provider for the home. And then he comes home, and he's totally devoted to the children. And he's exhausted at the end of the day, but does he sit on the couch? No. He lays on the floor and plays with them and gives them time, and then reads to them and sings to them and talks to them, and helps me clean up after dinner's over, and helps me feed the children, and then helps me get them to bed. And then at the end of the night, when he's ready to go to sleep, he then is totally devoted to me, and he stays up and he talks to me and he listens to me and he gives me affection, and he goes out of the way planning days and days ahead of time a perfect Valentine's weekend with rose petals and poems and all these things that most people get in the first year that they're dating. And that's because he is devoted to me. He is devoted to our children. He is devoted to God. And I just feel like he is the best husband in the world. And I'm going to stop because people pick on me. But he's absolutely devoted to everything he does and to everything that is good. Andy, our daughter, she's just one. But I think that one of the greatest strengths that she possesses for being so small is that she is an extraordinary listener. She, and it's funny because we had to sort of learn how to communicate with her because she's brand new. She's just learning to communicate. But when we learn to show our patience with her rather than a quick discipline or a quick reprimand, when we learn to how she responds, you know, if she's doing something that is disobedient to Dustin or I, or something that, you know, is not appropriate behavior, when we sit down and look at her and talk to her, all it takes is one time, and she stops. She looks at us in the eye. She makes eye contact the whole time, and then it's a quick meow, meow, which means yes, ma'am. But she, you know, when we said good listener, I think that a better word would have been perceptive. She's very, very perceptive. She's listening also, I think, to the words in between the lines, and that's pretty extraordinary for a one-year-old. But like Tucker, I got my feelings hurt a couple weeks ago by an acquaintance of mine, and I was, you know, a little sad that night, and she sensed that, and she had heard me talking to Dustin about how this girlfriend had upset me, and she, you know, just sat there with me and came up and put her arms around my leg and just looked up at me, and she was listening and perceiving, and I feel like that's such a wonderful attribute for any person to have, and so for her to be good at it so young, it excites me. And going back to Dustin being devoted, when we were given this task, he said, okay, this is what we need to do. We need to put our foundation at the bottom, which are our strengths, and then a good, strong strength of our marriage, then put our children on our shoulders next, and then at the top put the goal that we're working towards, what we feel like we're good at, but what we want to really, really succeed at, and again, devoted to our family. We chose commitment because we feel like at this point, Dustin and I are extremely committed to our family and to raising our family in a way that is pleasing to God and to loving each other in a way that's pleasing to God and in a way that when we have been married for 50 years, we get to send in our picture to the magazine. But I feel like because that's such a wonderful goal for us, our children are watching that and they're seeing, oh, mommy and daddy chose to spend the day with us rather than to go hang out with their friends, or mommy and daddy chose to, you know, make time for just our family rather than, you know, doing these other things that they would rather do. Or we're all going to go do this together rather than us taking turns doing things individually. And I think that they're seeing that. So, you know, when my son has a choice to stay with Nanny and Grandpa, which he loves and is great, he says, no, I want to go home with Daddy and Mommy. And I think that the example that we're setting for them in being committed to one another, they're seeing it, they're learning, and it's becoming important to them too.
Okay, I want to thank you guys for that. And it's time for us to take a little break.